Hello, welcome again to another episode of Musicians Talk Music. I'm Omar Martinez, and I just want to welcome you watching on YouTube, the YouTube channel. You can find it as Musicians Talk Music, or any of the podcast platforms as well, with the same name, Musicians Talk Music. I'm in Los Angeles today. I'm really honored to have one of the greatest drummers of this city. I'll just mention some of the few artists that he's played with through his career a little later. But here we have Gordon Campbell.
What's up, man?
Thank you.
How you doing?
Good, thank you.
All right.
Thank you again for taking the time, saying yes to this project. I just started this project recently, and I heard that you, you're starting your own podcast. So
yep.
I'll be asking you a little bit about it later.
Okay.
So you can let everybody know about it.
Perfect.
So they can check it out. He's played with the greats, from Mary J. Blige to Earth, Wind & Fire, Whitney Houston, who else? Neo, everybody, basically everybody.
A little bit of everybody.
So I'm really honored to be here and to interview you. Just let us know a little bit about your beginnings. I know you're from New York.
Mm-hmm.
You were born in Connecticut, but you were raised in New York.
Yeah, born in New Haven, Connecticut, but I probably moved back to New York. My mom was from Newburgh, New York, so I grew up in Newburgh. I probably moved back when I was about a year old, or probably less than that, actually. But grew up in Newburgh, New York. Started playing drums when I was 4 or 5 at church, at my grandfather's church.
Cool. You basically started playing not only drums, but like organ and everything you could pick up.
Yeah.
Bass.
Yeah.
This is basically church musicians. Yes, do,
basically.
Right?
Yeah, I was going to say, when your parent or grandparent is the pastor of the church and you're there all the time, you end up normally playing something. Most pastors' kids play organ or drums or something. So I was around and I had the ear, and my whole family all played, all my aunts and uncles. Most of them play organ, or they sing, or they direct the choir, something musical.
Cool.
So I was just around it.
Was it back then when you realized, like, I like music, I want to, as a kid, I don't know, how was your mindset about it, but like, I want to be a musician, I like this, and I want to just pursue it?
I guess at that age, I wasn't thinking necessarily pursue it, but it was pretty early. Matter of fact, I was in elementary school and I was in the band. And for whatever reason, they had a song that required drum set, because most of the time, it's like an orchestra, you play snare or bass or whatever.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, they had a drum set. I don't remember. And I played a solo, and this guy, he had a polka band. I can't remember the name of the band. But they went to my mom and like asked, could I play with them? So that was my first idea that I could actually like play with a band.
Nice.
I wasn't even thinking money or anything at that point.
Yeah.
I was just like, my mom was like, yeah, they were asked, could you like play with them?
It was fun. It was just fun for you.
Yeah.
That's cool. And when did you start like taking music lessons?
Fourth grade. Back then, fourth grade, that's when you pick the instrument. Like if you want to be in band, you pick an instrument, you know. But I was already playing since I was 5, so I was like, drums, like,
yeah,
play drums.
Yeah.
Like, did y'all have to ask?
Well, let me tell you, in Puerto Rico, like, if there's not a tuba player, they'll give you the tuba.
Are you serious?
Yeah. They'd be like, what do you want to play? Trumpet.
We need tuba.
Right. We need a tuba, so here you go.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Take me all the way to your high school years and your first gigs, or, you know, professional gigs or whatever you were doing over there.
Okay. So I do have to say, in terms of professionalism, the one thing about gospel drummers playing in a church setting, even as a little kid, we weren't getting paid. We were actually, I'm Church of God in Christ, so we were taught it was wrong to get paid back then. Like, you don't get paid playing for the Lord. But it's a professional situation because it's a choir, it's an audience, you can't stop. So from an early age, I was already playing, I guess, in a professional situation. It wasn't a huge church or anything. It was, you know, moderate-sized church. But we had a full band. Well, we had organ, drums, and sometimes keyboard or something. No bass or nothing yet. But I had to play, and you couldn't stop, and there's people there.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Pretty much that's professional.
Yeah.
But
that's more like a mindset more than anything else.
Yes.
Like, I mean, even if it's a small gig, like, I'm going to do my best and I'm going to be professional about it.
Right.
You know? It doesn't matter if this is not a professional venue.
Right. I mean, at that point, I didn't know the difference. I was just there playing. But that was my first. But a lot of churches have, a lot of African American churches have conventions where everybody goes. So Church of God in Christ had these conventions like in Memphis, Tennessee, and then the summertime they would have them all over the country. So as a kid, we would go all the time, and that's where I started playing like in a real setting with like a monitor and his bass players, and you know, as a kid, I'm like, yo, this is it. And I actually met a lot of people there. I met Sput from Snarky Puppy and from Ghost Note, and Doobie Powell was there. Another guy named Myron Williams from Texas. Who else? It was a bunch of us that all kind of came up as young kids, and we would just navigate. We would not navigate, but we would end up by the stage where the drums and the instruments were. And then it was always a room somewhere in the convention center with empty with instruments just sitting there.
Yeah.
So we would end up there late at night jamming. You know, from little, probably between 10 and 15 years of age, we were like already hanging out. Every summer we would run into each other. Lil John Roberts would be around too. I'm trying to think who else. Just a bunch of people.
That's cool.
So, but once you finally get to play, then you're actually, it's actually a professional setting, you know.
How does it feel like you were hanging out and with this, you know, you as a kid and all these kids, not knowing, you know, that in the future, like most of, you know, all of you were like going to play with this big artist. And
it's crazy. We didn't know. We were just hanging out, and when I saw them play, I was like, oh, they're killing.
Looking back at that now.
Now, it's funny. It's like history now. Like, yo, we would have never known. We knew each other were good. Like, we knew, you know, like, yo, he's killing, or he's dope. Or, you know, we would look forward to the summers where we can go to the conventions. Or in November when we would go to Memphis, and we would see the homies and, you know, hang out. It was funny. Back then, all of us had a stick bag and a pedal, and you always see little kids walking with the stick because it's like, if I get a chance, I'm going to have my, you know. So, yeah, hindsight's always 20/20, but back then, we were just hanging out.
Were you already in the studio business, like recording? Had you recorded yet?
Zero.
not back then? There?
Nope, just church and playing in school. In school, I did all the music stuff. I sang in chorus. I taught the gospel choir. I played piano too, so I would teach. By my senior year in high school, I was teaching the gospel choir, played for gospel choir, chorus, marching band, jazz band, stage band, like anything music, orchestra. I was doing everything all the way through school, you know, so that's what everybody knew me as, the band geek, I guess. I was playing whatever I could.
When was your first gig, you remember? That you got paid whatever amount and you were like, whoa.
Right. Well, I was still in high school, and one church that would fellowship with my church, we were actually in the same district. This guy named Jimmy Childs had a group called Shining Light, a gospel group. And I don't know exactly how they started calling me to do it. I forget. But I started playing with them, and that was my first gig. Which is funny, because he paid me some money the first thing I did with him. And I was like, man, I can't take this, man. It's not right. Because I was taught that it was wrong to take money to play in church. You know, he's like, man, take that money. You know, put some gas in the car. I was borrowing my mom's car at that point. Man, put some here. So that was the first real group where we actually rehearsed, you know, a couple times a month. And we would do concerts. And basically, whoever was in upstate New York, like Poughkeepsie, Newburgh area, like BB and CC, Commission, who else? Different groups, gospel groups that were big then. We opened up for a few of those. So we had setting. That's the first time I ever knew what backline meant, because he was like, well, we got to get a kit. What kind of kit you want to rent? I'm like, we can rent drum? Like, I didn't know any of this stuff. So Shining Light and James Childs is the first person. James and Ralphine Childs were the first people that hired me to actually play, and we rehearsed, and it was pretty cool.
Now that you mentioned the whole thing about, you know, getting paid and how, you know, because I'm in it too. Like, we were taught, like, if you're playing for the Lord, you should not get paid.
Right.
It's like you're doing from your heart.
So, right.
You know, what do you think about that now, about church and paying musicians at church and all of that?
It's a ministry, but it's also a business. And what we provide is a service. And the majority of us that play, especially that we play like at a bigger church, we're there a lot. That's our job. We don't have day jobs. Mm-hmm. So we should get paid for doing it. The Levites should get, you know.
Yeah.
They're, you know. And also, on the business side, I understand that the music helps bring people in. So it's like, the better the, I wouldn't say the better the music, but if the music is good, more people will come. Because, you know, They don't want to hear no, you know.
Yeah.
But if the music is good, that aids in the ministry. It helps people come. So I'm all for it.
When did you, you know, when did you realize that it was a good thing to get paid as a musician, as a church musician? You know, when you got that first gig.
Got that first check.
Yeah.
Even though I was like, here, take it back. Because I, you know, in my mind, I'm like, man, it's money. Money is good. Yeah. Like, we need money.
Cool.
And where they were located was maybe 45 minutes north of Newburgh, a city called Kingston. So I'm driving back and forth to rehearsals. I actually needed that money for gas.
Yeah, yeah.
So he was like, man, no, take this. You know, it probably wasn't even a lot, but it was enough to where I was like, yo.
Yeah, yeah. How old were you here, like, more or less? How old were you?
17.
Okay.
Yeah, 17, 18.
So what happened after this? You finished high school?
Finished high school. I went to D.C., to Howard University. Mm-hmm. I was a jazz studies major. So I had a scholarship to be in the marching band, so I marched for 3 years and was a jazz studies major. So I was in D.C.
Cool. And when was your first, I know you, your first tour. Let's go to your first tour. Mm-hmm. Was in 93.
Yeah.
With this group called Shy.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me all about the before, like how you get connected with these guys and how you started.
Okay. So at Howard, probably like most schools, there's a fine arts building. The basement of fine arts is all practice rooms. So the drummers at Howard, which was only a couple of us, Chris Dave was there, a guy named Aaron Walker, Mark Prince, who else? That was it for a minute. It was four of us. We all had our own practice rooms. So Shy would be in one of the rooms because most of the rooms are open. They have pianos. They would be in there practicing with a piano, singing like a piano and them just singing. One of the guys from Shy was also in marching band, so he knew me. So just from being at Howard, and originally Chris Dave was going to do that gig, but he got Mint Condition around the same time. Yeah. So he was like, hey, man, I'm about to go to Minneapolis to work with Mint. They want me to do Shy, but you're going to have to do it. And I'm like, really? And he's like, yeah, they leaving in a couple weeks. So I'm like, dude, I'm like, I got one semester of school left and I'm done. But I was like, I'm out.
Yeah.
You know,
wait,
so.
How was your decision on like, okay, I got just one semester left. I can just stay and get this done with and then go on tour with whoever I want, or the money was good. Like, what was in your mind to make the decision?
It wasn't as much the money as much as the opportunity. Like, that opportunity don't come daily. You know, and we're in D.C., so it's like, there's stuff in D.C., there's a huge music scene, but in terms of, like, getting a tour, like, we're going on tour,
yeah,
on a tour bus, that don't happen a lot. So you got to jump on the opportunity when it comes. It's like, yeah, it's not even a question. I didn't trip off the money, nothing. I mean, I just had to call my parents and be like, look, I'm about to leave school. So
did you know, like, all right, I'm probably going to put a stop on this, but I'm going to finish it?
Well, that was a conversation I had with my parents. Like, this is back in the day when everybody had phones in their house. So my dad, I guess, was on one phone. My mom was on the other phone. And my dad was like, you don't need to leave school. You're almost done. You need. And my mom was like, yeah, I don't think he's asking us. And I'm like, thanks, Mom, because I'm not. I'm out. I'm leaving. And she said, just promise me that you're going to come back and finish. I said, I promise. And that was that.
Wow.
For me, I wasn't necessarily tripping either. I was like, dude. And on top of that, some of my friends, like Gerald Hayward, I was seeing, he was touring, Lil Jon had started. So guys that I kind of knew, I'm seeing them on TV playing, doing gigs and stuff. I'm like, I want to do that, you know. So because of that, when the opportunity came, I was like, I'm out.
Yeah.
It just so happened that they moved to L.A. and they're like, well, we got to go. We're going to L.A. We're going to rehearse in L.A. for a couple of months. Back then, they used to rehearse for like maybe 2 months before the tour started. So that's how it went down.
Tell me about that first impression of L.A. when you got here, knowing like L.A. is like this big scene and industry of music, movies, and everything. Like, what's your first impression of the city?
Exactly what you said. Most people, I think, it is the big city, and it does have the big everything in terms of entertainment, but I guess that's what I was thinking. Like, oh, man, it's all these cliques and all this. So I was probably nervous. Like, I got to show up. This is my first chance. I got to, like, really represent and play well.
Yeah, man.
So I guess that was my first instinct, you know.
Making a good impression so
you
can get connected and all
that. Yeah, and probably nervous.
Yeah.
It's been,
almost
30 years now.
Yeah, but before you moved, you came, but you were, you know, in and out.
Yeah, I didn't really want to move here, actually. I was out here with Shy a lot. that year was 1993, and we came out in March of 1993, and we toured pretty much through December. But whenever we have a week or two off, they would bring us back to LA, and we had we always had a rental car for the band. So at night, we were just finding whoever was playing, any jazz club. Back at that time, the Tonight Show, the Jay Leno band, was Branford with Tane and Kenny Kirkland. They would play Wednesday nights at a hotel on Sunset, so we'd see them. Cornelius Mims and a band called Tease was playing. I met them at Prince's Club. The Glam Slam downtown. So any jam session, we were like there. We were like, you know what I'm saying?
Did you go to the jam sessions to like actually play or just like?
Nah, we ended up sitting in because Shy was kind of big. So you know how the industry is. If there's a big artist that's out and there's other musicians, they're going to be like, who's playing? Who's on drum?
Yeah, yeah.
So because they were kind of big, people were like, oh, that's the band they played with Shy. Oh, you want to sit in? It was like, yeah. You know what I'm saying? We took opportunity. That's, you know, how I met a lot of people before I even moved here. They knew us from being the Shy band, and we wanted to play. We was like, yo, we playing.
In what year did you finally move here? Like
the next year, 1994. Yeah. The tour pretty much finished in December of 1993. And I had one semester left, so I went back, started school in January. By May, I was out. Two days later, I was back out. Yeah, I came right back out. So 94, I was here staying at my friend Tim Carman's house for a while, sleeping on his couch for months. And I didn't want to move here. I was like, hey, I'm going to just do the gig. He put me on with Gerald Albright and Layla Hathaway. Tim Carman did. And
why didn't you want to move here? Like, what?
I just like D.C. I didn't know any better. You know what I'm saying? D.C. is probably my favorite city to this day. I love going back. But I don't know. I just was like, I was used to D.C. I had a couple bands that I played with. So I was working. I was actually playing organ at a church. So I was pretty set there. Probably I had a couple tickets to come home. And every time, like a day before I was supposed to leave, Gerald and Layla got another gig. And then finally, by end of June, they was like, we got a tour with Frankie Beverly and Maze. We're going to open up. So I was like, all right, I'm going to do the tour. I guess it's meant for me to be here.
Well, so tell me the story you told me earlier about these two bands. So you were alternating. The guy broke his arm.
And that was on the first tour in 93. There was a tour that used to go out every year for years called Budweiser Superfest. Al Haymon was the promoter. And whoever the hot R&B hip-hop groups were at the time, everybody was on the Superfest. So the year we did it in 93, Shy, Silk, SWV, H-Town, LL Cool J, Tag Team, who else was on there? I think MC Light probably did some, Naughty by Nature. It was mad groups on there. So from there, we just met everybody. The band for Silk and SWV was Valdez Brantley, who was Usher's MD, Kern Brantley, who MD'd everybody. Gerald Hayward was on drums. And I think Lauren Dawson was on keys too, him and Val. So we were the two younger bands that was on the tour. So we all, you know, we hung out daily. Gerald ended up breaking his hand on the tour. So he played most of the tour with a cast. By the end of the tour, he broke the cast, and they were like, you got to stop playing for a minute. Well, by the end of that tour, they were like, can you come do these dates with Silk for Gerald, subbing for Gerald? And I was like, well, Shy got gigs these days. And we looked at the calendar. They exactly lined up every other day. Shy, one city, Silk the next day, like that. So I literally, probably for like 2 weeks, every day I was flying back and forth. Until they got tired, like, dude, we can't fly you every other day. You know, I was just subbing for Gerald, but, you know.
Yeah, so everybody else was on the tour bus.
Yeah, like,
you were alone.
Silk was on their bus, Shy was on their bus, and I was just staying in hotels by myself, catching a taxi to the airport, flying out, meeting them, because they were in different cities.
Yeah.
But literally every day for 2 weeks, one day was Shy, the other day was Silk, next day was Shy. I even did a couple TV shows with Silk. We did Arsenio Hall with Silk, and what else? Something else, I forget. But yeah, it was pretty whirlwind for me.
Yeah, that sounds like.
And I was 21, 22.
Wow. So you moved to LA in 94, mm-hmm. and what happened with Shy? When did you kind of stop playing with them mm-hmm. or move to the next artist, or what happened?
Well, you know what normally happens, like once that record kind of dies down or the tour is over, they go back into the studio to work on a new album. So at that point, after Shy the first album, Tim got me on with Gerald and Layla, and you know, like the jazz and smooth jazz artists, they work pretty much year round. So I did that gig for a minute, and then Shy went back out. Probably they had just a couple dates in 95, and in 96, a few dates. But then by that point, I did those dates. Then I put one of my homies on there because I got busy with Gerald and Layla. I started doing some of the smooth jazz gigs, but then Rahsaan Patterson came out on MCA. Eric Benet was on Warner Brothers. Brownstone came out. I think they were on Columbia. So like all these artists, and there wasn't a lot of young gospel type drummers out here at that point. I was really the only one. You know, there were some other, you know, R&B funk drummers, but they weren't like churchy. So I just remember everybody like, man, your feel is crazy. Like, how'd your feel? I'm like, I don't know. Like, I didn't really know. I just played in church. And at Howard, that's a jazz school. So I was playing, learning straight ahead at Howard. So all of that mixed in, it was just a couple other older guys, Donnell Spencer, Derek Oregon. That was around a lot. This guy named D-Loke was around. Well, I knew about him maybe a year or two after I was here. Jamie Gamble, there was a couple of L.A. guys, but
yeah,
I just was running into everybody, and I lived around the corner here in North Hollywood, so. Yeah.
Did you consider yourself an all-around drummer? Meaning, you play all these different styles, and you do it really well. I mean, you got to put some practice into it and some ears into everything.
I think the biggest thing is just listening to all different types of styles so you know what the vocabulary sounds like in each style. Like, it's always been my pet peeve to hear somebody do, like, some linear, like, almost gospel licks over a jazz song. Like, no, music is from your heart. So if you feel that, play it. I'm not saying that you can't play it, but a lot of times people play it because they don't have vocabulary. They don't know Max Roach or Art Blakey or Tane or Elvin or Tony Wynn. You know what I'm saying? So I listen, growing up, I can only listen to gospel music unless it was something on the radio. But because I guess I had an ear for music, anything I heard in the mall, my mom would listen to the traffic in the morning. They would play like classic rock, so I didn't even know that I was being influenced.
Yeah.
Till years later, I learned the songs like Chicago, or like Toto, or like Paul Simon, or anything. I didn't even know that I was soaking all that stuff up. I didn't know who the drummers were, anything. And probably around high school, I have a cousin named Al Boson who was a drummer in Brooklyn. He played for a gospel artist named Timothy Wright. So whenever I would go to his house in Brooklyn, he always had all these albums with Billy Cobham. So I'm like, who is that? There's a picture like Billy like that with the drums in the background or something. I'm like, who is that? Oh man, that's Billy Cobham. But when I started, you know, I started working at an early age, paper route and stuff, I would go to the record store, which is a thing of the past, and I found a Billy Cobham album. I didn't even know what it was. I just bought it because it had Billy Cobham on it. And then I found Joe Sample Spellbound with Omar Hakim and Marcus Miller. So I bought it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I had the actual records.
Wow.
So by that point, my parents knew that I was serious about playing drums. They got me private lessons for, you know, probably a year or something like that. But they knew, so they didn't really trip off of me not. If it was jazz, it was cool. Like R&B,
I don't know anything about drums. It's not my corner. But, you know, you want to develop your own sound, your own vocabulary, even to a point that when people hear a record and you're in it, people can say, oh, that's Gordon. How can you develop, like, your own style, your own sound in all these different styles? Like, country, oh, that's Gordon. Gospel, that's Gordon. Jazz, I know that's Gordon. Has to be Gordon.
First of all, that's weird because to me, I don't know. But people tell me that. Like, there was a song in the movie Dreamgirls with Jennifer Hudson. I Love You, I Do. And my boy was like, yo, is that you on that, Jennifer Hudson? He said, I knew it was you. I'm like, how'd you know that?
Yeah.
I just know. But to me, to answer your question, I just listen and learn from everybody. Like, my biggest influence probably was Joel Smith in the very beginning because of gospel. He's the gospel guru. Joel Smith, and then like Gerald, Jeff Davis, Dana Davis, Michael Williams, all these guys are the big gospel guys of the day. But then I started getting into Billy Cobham. I started getting into Omar Hakim a lot. Like, I used to play Omar Hakim sticks and everything. Then I got into Weckl. The Next Step video came out. Then I got into Gad, Vinny. Then when I went to Howard, Chris Dave turned me on to Dennis Chambers. I wasn't even hip to Dennis. till I got to college. And Chris was like, this is 1990. He was like, yo, you don't know about Dennis? I was like, mm-mm. So we start listening to Pick Hits, John Scofield with Dennis and P-Funk. And then it was a jazz school. So, of course, Tane, Elvin, Buddy Rich, Louis Belson, just everybody. Yeah. So I think to get your sound is developed from taking pieces of everybody. And the more you play, the more you just tend to do stuff.
Yeah.
And your sound, even the way you hit the snare, even the way your feel is on the kick, if you play on top of the beat, behind, all that stuff just comes from experience. Mm-hmm. So, like, in my mind, I wasn't sitting there like, man, I need to create my own sound.
Yeah.
I never thought that. I just play. And I just play, and I got pieces from everybody. Oh, so yeah. People tell me they know that it's me. Yeah. I know what I would do. Now, what's funny is, if it's something planned, even if it's something that I played back in the day, if I'm singing along with it, I go, that's the exact same thing that's on the recording. And I didn't do that on purpose. It's just like,
it's just automatic.
Yeah, you tend to play the same stuff.
Can you tell, like, some of your hero drummers, can you kind of, like, if you don't know, like, this song, who played in this song, can you kind of tell? Like,
yep.
I think that's Vinny.
Well, and that's the difference with a lot of, and I don't want to sound like an old dude, but a lot of the younger guys sound alike. And maybe because YouTube and social media, you can just copy, you can see it. And back then we didn't have computers, so you couldn't see anybody unless you saw them live or on TV. So back then everybody's sound was really distinct. Like if it's Tony Thompson, who else? I mean, there's so many different people, man. If it was Vinny, to this day, especially if it's Gad, you know Gad. If it's Gerald Hayward, I know Gerald Hayward. If it's Joel Smith, I know, you know what I'm saying?
Maybe there wasn't so many things around, like you open the computer and you can see any drummer,
social media,
like a Japanese gospel drummer,
exactly.
You find something, a Chinese gospel drummer,
yes, it's easier to cop because the access is so much broader.
That's a lot of influence.
Back then it was like if you didn't have that record, see it on TV, or your parents took you to that concert, you would have never heard of the person.
Yeah.
So you had to either search it or have parents that were musicians, which mine weren't. They weren't musicians, so it was like whatever I saw, you know, that's what it was.
Yeah.
You know, and then my cousin with Billy Cobham, I was so obsessed with him because my cousin was playing with Timothy Wright, which is kind of a big artist back then. And I go to his house and he had records coming out the wall all the way out here that were all Billy Cobham records. So I'm like, all right, well, he must be the cat.
Yeah.
Then I heard it and I was like, he is the cat.
Yeah. So before you played with Everything on Fire, you played with Mary J. Blige, or
yeah,
was it before?
Yeah, I did Mary. That was 97. I started playing with Earth, Wind in 99. Kenny Lattimore was pretty cool. With Kenny, that was 96. We opened up for Barry White. So a lot of groups I worked with, we opened up for somebody big. So we were on pretty major tours.
TV shows, tours, records, yeah. Studio?
Not as much studio. Okay. Around the time I came, which is the early 90s, everybody was programming that's doing R&B. Back in the day, like I've spoken to like Harvey Mason and Dugu Chancellor, who's another one. You definitely just know his sound. Rest in peace, and Dugu. They were doing 3 and 4 sessions a day because there was no real programming back then.
Yeah.
It was just, they needed drummers. Mm-hmm. So when I came, it was more program stuff.
Okay.
So I never really got in the studio scene until more, you know, recent, you know, the last few years. And I'm still not, like, considered a session guy like that. I just get called for random sessions, and I've been here long enough I built up a nice amount of stuff that I've been on. It's a little different now, but when I was younger, I always said, your legacy is the record you played on. Because
exactly.
There was no internet. Now,
yeah.
You know, any concert you do is in the internet,
yeah.
You know, for infinity. But back then, it was like, and even still now, like, the P-Funk All-Stars Live at the Beverly with Dennis playing drums and percussion, or like any Michael Jackson with Ndugu or John Robinson or Harvey on anything. It's like, or Mike, what's his name? Mike Clark on Headhunters, or that stuff is like legendary. And there's no way, so I always want to do more studio stuff.
Right after you finished with Shy and all that, you mm-hmm. play with some groups,
mm-hmm.
and then you got with Mary.
Yeah.
And that was 94?
That was, Mary was 97.
Oh, that was 97.
Yeah, that was 97. Yeah, 94 was Gerald and Gerald Albright and Layla.
Okay.
Hathaway. And Mary's gig was almost like a fluke. I was in New York City with Kenny Lattimore doing a TV show.
Yeah.
So I knew the guys, and this is where it kind of went back. You were asking me earlier, how do you connect with other people and all that? I just stayed in touch with like Kern and Val and Gerald Hayward and all them guys. They were in New York rehearsing with Mary. Well, Kern and Val was, Gerald was doing Blackstreet at the time. So, but I knew they were rehearsing. So they was like, yo, when you're here, just come through the rehearsal.
Yeah.
So I was there with Kenny. I went by SIR, and they were rehearsing with Mary.
Yeah.
And Kern was actually doing Boys to Men at the time. So they were, Kern was like the Ricky Minor back in the day. He had all, every band, every gig. So I went up there, and we was just hanging. And this is in the days before we had cell phones. We just had sky pagers, little pagers that go on the clip. And I never forget, me and my boy Eric Smith went to see Al Jarreau at the Beacon Theater because we had a night off. And I got a text from them. So I went and checked the voicemail at a payphone. And it was like, hey, man, we just fired the drummer for Mary. Like, if you want it, come down right now. So we literally left the Al Jarreau concert in the middle of the concert,
wow,
hopped in a cab, went down to 25th Street to SIR. And they was all sitting there like, there was a drum set there, no drummer, and the keyboard players. That band was a four-piece. Three keys and drums, that was it. And Val was playing key bass,
because
he's not a bass player. So two keys and Val on key bass and then the drummer. So they all sitting there like. And I walked in and they were like, hey man, if you want to play, it was me and another drummer, Nathaniel Townsley. And Nat was in the other room rehearsing, but they saw him, so they said, come in here. And it was like, play. And that was like, I'm cool. Like, he didn't want to do it. So I was like, I'll do it. So I went.
Was that kind of like an audition type of thing? Or?
Kind of, but not really. It was like, they were in rehearsals for the tour.
Yeah.
And they fired, the story is, they told the guy, play it like the drummer that played before you, which is another guy.
Mm-hmm.
And the drummer that they had was like, man, that was whack. And they was like, no, you're whack. Get out. That's exactly what happened. They told him, you're whack. Get out.
Wow.
So he just left.